Okay, good morning. Welcome to class number 10. Can you believe there's been that many already?
In some ways it seems like it.
In some ways it doesn't seem like it. chapter 11. Chapter 11 is the questions that we have. Yeah.
Did you have any more?
I don't have any with me. I have them back in the office. you should have them, Lalo, because they've been handed out for about 3 weeks now. Maybe a little longer. It should be 9, 10, and 11. Yeah, I guess it's 10, 11, and 12 that are together in one group. Okay, as I stated last week, all the classes up to last week kind of just laid the groundwork for what we're getting into now is actually the qualifications themselves. We'll be talking about the qualifications of elders and of deacons. And last week we started with a discussion on experience. We actually talked about two things, three things, but two according to this outline. If the individual desires the office of an elder, it says bishop, he desires a good work. And we need to understand that that desire is not desire from the standpoint of desiring an elevated position over the congregation. Peter says to be careful that you don't lord it over the congregation. It is the desire of a servant. You know, the position is to serve the congregation, to lead it. So your desire is not for any accolades that you may get from that, but it's from the desire to serve and do what's right for the Lord and bring the congregation with you. At the time that this was written, the church was under tremendous persecution, especially in the Gentile communities, and 1 Timothy was written to Timothy while he was at Ephesus. So we need to keep that in mind. So desiring the office, you would ask yourself, under all of those conditions, why would anyone desire the office? And that's part of the problem that they got into, is that while men may have seemingly had all the qualifications, these set of instructions were written from the viewpoint of an eldership that was already established and tweaking that situation where you get the right men in there, because apparently they had some who were overlooking what the congregation was doing. And this congregation had many problems, as you see from 1 and 2 Timothy. So you tie that right into, to take the office, obviously, you had to desire it, but you have to desire it for the right reason. And then we started talking about experience. It says that the person should not be a novice. He should not be a new convert. If you tie that into the discussion that we had over the proper reason for desiring the office, why should someone not be a new convert if he, as an elder, if he meets all of the qualifications, at least on the surface? Why would that not be a good idea?
One reason, he hadn't had long enough time as a new convert, right close.
Right.
He hadn't had enough experience.
Right. Right.
But for an older person that's been in the church for a while, he's an elder.
When you look at you're absolutely right. When you look at the qualifications of an elder, there's two categories of experience. When you look at all of his qualifications, there's doctrinal experience, so how well grounded is he in the truth, but there's also a domestic requirement. And so how well established is he? How experienced is he to be able to counsel, if you will, the congregation in worldly matters or family matters or anything of the kind. He has to be somebody that's well established. A new convert, the Apostle Paul says, is not a good idea. Why? Why does the Apostle say that it's not a good idea to have a new convert?
I think the Bible, Sonny, did mention so that the person doesn't get puffed up.
Exactly.
Fall into the temptation of the devil.
Right. Right. We discuss, when you boil it all down, what the Apostle is saying is it all stems around pride. And pride was the downfall of the devil in the first place. And so what he's talking about is so that you don't fall into the snare of the devil is the same snare of the devil. another reason for the person to have experience, remember, there's two areas that he's going to be dealing with. Domestic issues in the congregation and doctrinal issues in the congregation. So he needs to be a man of experience in both of those areas. Because when error comes into the church from the doctrinal side, if it comes in through the front door, it's obvious, more obvious. But if it comes in slowly over time, as the apostasy did, at the end of the first century, into the second and third and so forth, it's much more subtle than that. And one of the things that the eldership has to be is watchful and vigilant. And so you have to have the experience to be able to deal with doctrinal issues. If it's an outright contradiction, that's easy. But that's not the way they always come. They can come very, very subtle, and it can look like it's the right thing to do for all of the right reasons and a matter of expedient, and so you have to be careful with expediency. Yes, Lalo?
I'd like to add one more.
Go ahead.
Doctrinal and domestic.
Go ahead.
When I hear the word domestic, I'm thinking of family.
Right.
But you have another problem or another experience that needs to be gather experience in, and that's relational.
That's how I actually meant it, was life, you know.
Because if it is a family relationship and you have different members who become closely knit to one another
right.
In the course of the life of a congregation.
Right, you're correct.
And oftentimes, it's not like a domestic family, but it is a family in the sense of spiritual family, and you often have in those relationships difficulties with personalities and whatnot, so forth. And so an elder has to have at least an experience to deal with those kind of relationships.
Absolutely.
And those kind of problems that arise with the different characters, the different personalities and whatnot. I'm sure with the apostles, you know, they were made up of all kinds of 12 different personalities. Matthew was a tax collector.
Right, right.
And hated by the Jews generally because of the relationship with Rome and tax collecting. And then you have Simon, Simon the sorcerer.
Sorcerer.
But the idea is his name.
Simon Bar Jonah was what he was called.
He was a very patriotic.
Yes.
Simon the Zealot.
Yeah. Right. There you go. Yeah.
And so you have those two, and you have to somehow unite them. And realize the spiritual relationship
is right. When I was saying domestic, I was lumping up the family as well as life. Life in general in the congregation. But if you look at a congregation, I would say 90 to 95% of the congregation are made up of families. And so obviously a person who is going to be a candidate for an elder has to be someone who has enough experience to deal with that. Later, the apostle mentions that in dealing with those family-related issues, he needs to be married.
And so we had a little bit of a discussion of that last week, but we'll have more of a discussion later. What we're actually have done is taken both sets of qualifications, those listed in 1 Timothy 3 and those listed in Titus 1, realizing that they were written to two groups of people at two different times in history for two different reasons. One was to an established church that already had elders that needed to revisit these qualifications against those who were serving in the office. And that was at Ephesus, and that was written to Timothy. Titus, on the other hand, was to go through Crete and establish elders in every city. So the approach that the apostle gave there, it was the same qualifications, but just from a slightly different viewpoint. When you put them all together, then you wind up that they settle out into about six categories. And the six categories that we'll be discussing is experience, reputation, domestic relations, and that's life in general. The character of the individual, his habits as relates to that, his ability to teach and rule. And so, it's an important thing. Experience, I think we exhausted it. It's all around pride in terms of the new convert. He isn't going to be, by definition, as well doctrinated as somebody who's been a Christian longer. And he may not have proven himself in terms of racked up enough of life experiences to deal with life matters. So, but yet on the other hand, he may. It depends on what his age is and so forth. The thing that we want to be careful is not to draw that line so tightly and so dogmatic that there's not some flexibility there. When, I'll ask this question, when is it that an individual who's a new convert or a novice is no longer a babe in Christ, is no longer a novice? Is it going to be the same for everybody? No. If you have somebody, for instance, who has been a religious person, has attended church, but not Christ's church, and has somewhat of an understanding, and all of a sudden winds up being converted, he may not take as long to indoctrinate, because there's areas of his thinking that have to be refined and tweaked against the gospel. But somebody who is brand new, babe in Christ, who hadn't attended any church before, but suddenly studied enough to realize this is where he needed to be, is going to take more teaching, probably, than the other person would to get to that point where you don't consider them a novice or a babe in Christ anymore. But it's as different as human beings are one to another, that's how different this line will be. It'll be different in all cases. But they need, it's, since they're going to be observed when they're in this office, you teach by example, you need to look at somebody who has proven his abilities so far. At least that's how I see it. Yes, Lalo?
I'll never forget talking to Norton Guy back in 1969 when he was still in Reno. And the congregation, they had numerous conversions, no elders. And I recall Norton telling me that it was immense. The meetings were always immense because there were so many new converts who attended those meetings, and they were businessmen. They were well trained in business, with no experience in the church, like you say.
Right.
And the decisions were made, and of course, they had much right to speak as anyone else, even though they were only converts. They would object because their business experiences did not jive with this business decision. And so it was a very difficult thing to make.
Exactly.
I think that's one reason why he left.
Right. And you can understand if you had a person like that who was given the office of an elder, how difficult it would be for the body of elders in that situation to get anything done. And there's one other qualification that he'll have to meet here that we'll talk about later that falls right into there, and that's being someone who's not self-willed. You know, the more likely that individual would be self-willed just based on what you've said he had demonstrated to that point. So this all goes into one more qualification that he has to meet, and that deals with reputation. And in verse 7 of 1 Timothy 3, it says, "Moreover, he must have a good testimony among those who are outside, lest he fall into reproach and the snare of the devil." Why? If you have someone who's a Christian, and he's been a Christian long enough, he's well doctrinated, he's well able and apt to teach, he meets all of these qualifications, why, all of the other qualifications, I should say, why would it be important that he have good reputation among those that are outside the church? People in the world tend to ridicule Christians, don't they? Typically. Why do you do that? Why are you wasting your time? Da-da-da-da-da-da. Why would it be important that he have a good report with them? Is that at all what the apostle is talking about? What is the apostle talking about?
You don't want to be two-faced. You live one life, type of life on Sunday, then
right.
Monday morning you go out and join the crowd. So instead of staying a Christian, I know, I've been there.
Right.
In fact, I had a customer at the counter one time said you were different. I said, yeah.
Good, you're supposed to be.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't swearing, I go in the shop was they're swearing and stuff till I left, and so I was letting my light shine some way anyway, you know.
Right. Well, you hit it. Yes, Cal.
Well, people look at you, and they either accept you as being something or you're not about anything. And it's like the cop. If you got a good cop, you got a bad cop.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Even the crook, they want to see a cop. Should be good and should be fair and should
right.
He should, you know, they have an idea.
Right. Exactly.
Idea how that person should be, how he should conduct himself. People in the world, they won't look at somebody and say, "Oh, that person is, you know, he's something. He's, you know, his word is good." So the reputation is important, and it's going to be important further on if you're trying to convert.
Absolutely.
Into the church.
Absolutely. Yes, Sonny.
I think for the sake of the Christian faith, so that it can be respected and honored by all.
Mm-hmm.
Should they see that mm-hmm. the person is honorable, and the faith which it stands for as well, they would tend to believe that, yes, this is...
Right, right. You have a comment? You look like you want to say something. Okay. Here's what my thinking is on it, is that while it's important that we have a good reputation of those that are outside the church, it's not just anyone outside the church that he's talking about, but both of you talked all around the situation. It's all a matter of example. We've already seen in carrying out the duties that you're going to teach by example, whether you intend to or not. And so what the apostle is talking about, and you know, we had a sermon. Anthony did a sermon on it not long ago about are you a pretend Christian? What's that?
Undercover.
An undercover Christian. In other words, those that you encounter on a daily basis who know that you profess to be a Christian are going to be watching you from a distance. And it's one thing to talk the talk, but do you live what you talk? And that's what they're going to be looking at. And if you have a good reputation among them, that's your neighbors, those that are close to you. It's not just anybody out there in the world, but it's those in the world that come in contact with you and know you best. Do they respect you? Do you have a good rapport with them? Do they see somebody who's not a hypocrite? That's what this is talking about. Because when you stop and think about it, the apostle could throw this qualification out there qualification about an individual without saying those outside the church, and just say he should be of a good report. But how often does the members of a congregation really come in contact with each other in general? In other words, how well do you really know somebody? But somebody that you come in contact every single day is going to see you. And even if they're not in the church, then what they see and what they think of you is very important to the church. Go ahead.
For the most part, people are going to, they're going to spot, you know, some
mm-hmm.
You may fool some of the people, but the old thing goes, you may fool some.
Right, but not all of them. Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Most people, over a period of time, especially like in the congregation, they can see.
Right, exactly.
How you
act, exactly.
How you act, consistency, et cetera, et cetera. Really, you know, a deacon or an elder is a person who has risen, and when he's considered, that's because he's risen, you know, to the top
right.
by virtue of his actions.
Right.
Before he's even looked at.
Right.
He's doing the things, you know. I recall one time several people wanted to put a man's name for an elder. And my first reaction was, no, he's not ready. You know. And one thing, he never taught Bible classes. And that was brought up
right.
in a closed meeting.
Right.
He said, well, when I'm an elder, I'll start having Bible classes. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah, yeah. Cal, you had your hand up.
Well, whether we like it or not, it's not so much what you say, it's what you do.
Right, exactly.
People are always looking, they're watching what people do and how you conduct yourself and so forth. This morning, I talked to a friend of mine in Tallahassee, Florida. This guy's been there for 20 years, long story. But he and his wife divorced when they went back there. And 30 years, he's been dating the same lady for over 20 years. And he tells me this morning that they're getting together and they're going to get this house and so forth and so on. And then her ex-husband just had a massive heart attack. Long story, anyway. So, and he's telling me how she was still involved in his life. And, you know, and I said, well, you know, the main thing here is what she says, this is what she wants. But you watch what she does. What she does
right.
tells me that she still has feelings for this guy.
I see.
I've been telling you this for years, but, you know, but it's what it is. It's, this is the thing. My neighbor, for example, had told me some years ago about a situation where one of the neighbors had made some statement. He had told me, I'm a Christian, and they had made some statement about him doing something and said, I thought you were a Christian.
Right.
Well, it had to
right.
do with what he did, you know, and how he did.
Exactly. It all relates back to the church. The reputation of the church is only going to be as good as the reputation of the individuals they select as leaders of the church, because that's what the people are going to see from the outside to begin with. And is the church here for the members of the church? Is that the reason that the church is here? It's here predominantly for one purpose, and that is to get the gospel out to those that are outside. And you're not going to be able to do that efficiently, or maybe even at all, if you're a congregation who has selected individuals who don't have influence of those who are on the outside, because they're not respected by those on the outside. And, yes, Al?
Yeah, I think look at the picture of it. It goes way, way back
mm-hmm.
when, as we relate the story of it, when I believe it was Peter, when they were the disciples there eating, and when one of the disciples came in, he withdrew himself from them, and there, and of course that Peter stood him to his face, to their face.
Yeah.
To his face,
yeah.
to their face there. So
right.
they were doing some things there and were not practicing what they should have been doing.
Exactly.
Way even back there. And they should have known that.
Well, Peter should have known better. He was the first to preach to the Gentiles, you know. But he absolutely did, and that's what I'm sure Paul was telling him. So, you know, not to beat this to death, but reputation is extremely important. Yes, Lalo, go ahead.
Just by coincidence, I have a little article in the bulletin for tomorrow, and it was back in Toledo when I put it in the bulletin there. How do people see your God? It's very short. Among ancient primitive people, a man's God was judged by the individual who worshipped that particular deity. If a man was good, benevolent, and kind, then his God must also be benevolent and kind. If a man was rude, evil, and unwilling to share, then the man's God must be the same way. If one could not be trusted, then his God could not also be trusted.
Right.
By observing you, what do people think of your God?
Right, right.
Just want to put down.
Yeah, go ahead, Anthony.
It goes down to, like, say, I'll give an example, like the experience in my life. When I worked at Coca-Cola, you know, I tried my best to live as a Christian and have that good rapport, you know, even though, you know, I wasn't elder material or anything, but I was just living as a good, faithful Christian. One day, one of the Coca-Cola drivers ended up visiting there at Clovis where I attended. And, you know, if I would have been a hypocrite or somebody who professed to be a Christian at, you know, at church only and then at Coca-Cola lived like everybody else, and he came in the assembly and saw me there, you know, and I was living as a hypocrite, he would probably say, well, I don't want to be a part of this church if
right.
this guy
right.
who I work with acts crazy. And I think that's what it goes down to here in this context. If some of the outsiders saw somebody who was an elder, who lived as a hypocrite, they would say, well, I don't want to be part of that religion or that
right.
congregation of people.
Right. You know, it comes to this, and Lalo hinted to it when he's talking about how a person rises. If you look at these qualifications, there's nothing here that's so unusual that it shouldn't be something that it's not different than any Christian should have. So then, why is the apostle emphatically making an issue out of these things? It's this. While all Christians should have these attributes and meet these qualifications, you expect that looking at a cross-section of a congregation, there's going to be degrees of how individuals meet these, how well they meet these characteristics. You can meet them, and then you can really meet them. And I think that what you're looking for in an elder is someone who meets them, but by their example, they meet them very, very well. Better than maybe the main of the congregation. If not, how else can you lead that congregation? Do you have a thought on that, Lalo?
No, okay.
You know, it's levels, you know. And so you're going to be looking for those that stand out. Right? That's the way I see it anyway. And so while these are important, and to any Christian, to a candidate for an elder, you want someone who really demonstrates these attributes and maybe has attained them better than someone, so that he's in a position maybe to help someone else achieve those. You know, that's the purpose of an elder, to guide, to lead, and to feed the flock. And then the other issue, the next qualification is domestic relations. Mentioned in a couple of areas. You know, we had a discussion of this last week because of a question Sonny had. And that is, one, up here in verse 2, in a list of things the apostle lays out there, he says he must be the husband of one wife. And we talked a great deal about this issue and this qualification and what it means. And the fact that there's been a number of thoughts on this subject, if you will. You know, the husband of one wife, we all understand if he's to be the husband of one wife, then he can't be the husband of two at the same time, anyway. So he can't be a bigamist or polygamist and be qualified to this qualification. But at the same time, it says one. It doesn't say zero. So he has to be an individual that is married. And so we discussed, well, what if you have an elder then who has done an excellent job and his wife dies? You have to look at what marriage is. Marriage is a contract. And so when the wife dies, is that individual, are they married any longer? No, the contract is broken due to the death of the spouse. That's why he's free then to go marry if he wants to again. And so this husband of one wife doesn't mean zero, doesn't mean two, it means one, and we understand it's one at a time. One moment. So if the individual loses his spouse, he doesn't meet this qualification. But if he were to get married again, he would meet that qualification. You know, and not that the person needs to rush right out and get married again, but we just have to understand how this is stated. I know that there's more than one way of looking at this, but I think it's clear that when we say one of anything, we don't mean none, and we don't mean a multiplicity of them either. One means one. Go ahead.
There's so much controversy.
Oh, a lot, I know.
I think you just answered my question. The person who's an elder and the wife dies, so is he automatically disqualified to be an elder? Or can he, can he stay in that position? I guess it depends on the congregation.
It depends a lot on the congregation. I have had more than one viewpoint of that over the years, but whenever you stop and really look at what the apostle is saying and understand what marriage is and the fact that it is a contract, that when the contract is broken, legitimately broken, in this case, the death of the spouse, you certainly aren't married to that spouse, and in heaven there's not marriage or given to marriage. So marriage doesn't exist up there. So while some people may say, I'm not going to get married again out of honor and respect to their spouse, that's fine. I wouldn't say that there's a problem with that. But when the scripture says you have to have one wife, we should be willing to accept that that individual no longer has a wife. So if it can't be zero, and it can't be two or more, and it has to be one, then to me it's clear. I do know that he could probably continue to do his job effectively, but not as effectively as he could when he had a wife. Because it's that whole relationship of family. It's why an elder can't be single. We understand that. We would never put anybody before the congregation that was single. And that's why the apostle Paul was never an elder. Timothy was never an elder. They remained celibate. They remained single. Because of the persecution they were going through and the travel that they were doing, it wasn't wise to take a family with you. So that's why the apostle Paul, for instance, didn't have one. And so, That's an important thing. You know, we understand that single, you can't be single and be an elder. Why is it so difficult for us to understand sometimes that when the spouse dies, you're single? Like it or not, you're single. You may still wear that ring. That's fine. That's great. I don't have a problem with that. But I would have, if I were in the congregation, then I would have a problem with the person being allowed to continue. Not because I thought he couldn't do the job, but because of what it says here and because of the effectiveness of when you go to meet with someone, if you're married, you'll probably take your wife with you, or you should take your wife with you. Especially if you're meeting with another woman. If you're single or now find yourself an elder who is unmarried by virtue of the fact that your spouse died, who are you going to take with you? You can't take another woman of the congregation with you. That isn't going to look right either. You could take another male elder with you, but that isn't necessarily going to look right either. But if you had a spouse to take with you, then there's absolutely no room for any appearance of any kind of evil. And because believe me, rumors sprout up instantly. And most often they're not true, but they're there nonetheless. And they can tarnish your reputation in a heartbeat, and it can take the rest of your life to try to crawl out from under that if you're ever successful to crawl out from under that in the first place. So I believe that's why it's stated this way. Go ahead.
We had a discussion about that, I think, this morning. A person who was married before he became a member of the church, now remarried in the church, and the qualifications, still husband of one wife, or somebody, some people say husband of two wives.
Well, it says one.
Right.
One. Absolutely. It doesn't say two. And it doesn't say zero. And in worldly matters, we understand the meaning of zero and two and one, you know. And we clearly understand that. It's when we start trying to look for loopholes, I think, is what it is that causes the problem. You know, the apostle said that he has to be the husband of one wife. And we should understand it's one wife at a time. It's not two wives. See, what we need to remember is the apostle knew exactly what he was talking about. Because the Jews at this particular time, and many of the Gentiles communities, not all of them, but many of them practice polygamy and bigamy. And so the fact that if we understand that, and then you say the apostle says the husband of one wife, then it's clear what he's saying. Those two categories cannot serve as an elder. And the reason that it is stop and look at there's another part to this domestic relations that we haven't talked about yet in terms of the family. We're just talking about the husband of one wife. But look at Jacob. Was Jacob's household in peace and tranquility? Never. Never. You know, because of the competition of the two sisters, of his two wives. And so, if congregations such as Ephesus were to have selected someone out of those two communities, how can he prove his ability to rule the church, as it says, if he can't rule his home well? Was Jacob, with two wives, able to control his children? No. Ever. I contend he wasn't ever able to control them. Nor was he able to control his two wives. So he's the head of a very chaotic situation. Would he be a good choice for a leader? No, really not. Not that he's doing anything wrong. It's that the situation is such that he's not ideal to deal with somebody else's problems when he can't prove the ability to deal with his own. That's, I think, where it's coming from. Yes?
The fact that he showed favoritism himself, which is obvious to all of his kids.
Right. And that is a real problem, you know. So he wasn't a blameless person, you'd say. No. I think it would be difficult for any man to please two wives all the time. Yeah. You've heard me say it, and I'm going to say it again, and hopefully you never say it to my wife, but it's 100% true. One is enough. One is enough. When I look back, I've been married 42 years, and when I look back over those 42 years, they've been great. And if somebody else was there, they would not be. But the thing of it is, what I call great is like this, you know. There's ups and downs. I went through periods of time when we were separated, when I didn't know that we were going to be together another year when we were younger. All marriages go through those kind of tests and trials. But here we are, 42 years later. We are happily married. We've gone through a lot in the last few years, but we're still together. And that's what the apostle is talking about. Well, when you have two, man, I've had enough trouble dealing with one. Not two. Yes, Lalo.
So what you're saying is, stay here.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I love my wife very much, but...
My father has four.
Yeah.
Father has four? I knew how it was. How old is that? I think it was like 75, I don't think 25.
Yes, Lalo.
There's the controversy, you know, on each one of these.
Oh, yeah.
When I was in El Salvador, and they asked me to preach on the qualifications. When they came to this, husband and one wife, I just presented, I had already a chart.
Mm-hmm.
Says, five possible positions, quickly, at the time of his appointment.
Right.
Married to one woman.
Right.
And this would, of course, there's, you know, with all of these, there's a discussion, of course. Like you were saying, but this qualification would not be relevant if the wife dies. That's, you know, it comes back to that.
But that's how some look at it.
Husband and wife, only one wife, ever. Mm-hmm. Not a remarried person, whether it's widower or divorced. Mm-hmm. That's another thought. Number three, committed to only one woman. Mm-hmm. The literal rendering in the Greek is one woman, man, which... some interpret that to mean he doesn't have a roving eye. He's married to one woman, but he's always looking at other women. He's not that kind of person. Number four, not a polygamist.
Right.
Like I said.
Right.
Which was prevalent at the time. And number five, I pointed out that I know some brethren who have been taking a position, if he's married to only one woman.
I think the apostle is clear.
What position do you take?
Yeah.
Well,
yes, sir.
I just wanted to say something, then you can go to Alan. The idea that that this qualification has to meet at the time the person is ordained, that's what he refers to. A lot of people take that position. But here's my thought on that, why I disagree with that. I'm just bringing this up.
Mm-hmm.
Because say if a person meets all the qualifications, and then he's selected as an elder, and then later on he's not meeting the other qualifications, well, he's disqualified.
Absolutely.
And then later on, if his wife dies or whatever, then he's disqualified. You can always be disqualified if you don't meet those
Yeah, it's funny. After the discussion, I was going to make that very point. The thing of it is you can make that argument about each one of these qualifications. And we've already stated that these qualifications are attributes, are nothing that should be foreign to a Christian, whether he ever be an elder or not. And so the thing of it is taking these all together, if you can legitimately make that argument about this one, you can make it about any one of these. And the problem is when you look at some of these, it's obvious why the individual cannot demonstrate, especially some of these are positive attributes and some of them are negative attributes you can't have. And if you have them, it indicates a flaw in character. And a flaw in character isn't something that you turn on and turn off like a light switch. So he's disqualified, and all of a sudden he realizes that and works at it. I think if he became disqualified, he is disqualified. That doesn't mean some point down the road he wouldn't be able to demonstrate it, but it's all a matter of, again, reputation. When reputation is tarnished, whether it be without or within the church, it can be difficult to regain that respect or rebuild back to that position. And so I agree with you 100%. And so we have to be really careful how we look at these and not just isolate one thing because it fits some kind of an agenda, you know. And Al, you had a comment.
With Solomon, I think he had many wives and this type of thing. And that was before crisis times in there, where he would teach it under Christ there. It says abstain from sexual sins and the involvements and all this bit and this type of thing. So Solomon, the people under there, it seemed like they wasn't really condemned for it per se as such.
They're not, and so we don't want to get the wrong idea. You can look through the law all you want to, and you will never find a condemnation of anyone for having more than one wife. The law doesn't say you have to have one wife and one wife only. The New Testament law doesn't specifically say that either. However, it does say a lot of things about being a husband of one wife and not just for an elder because of the desirableness of it. When you look, so in the first century, it was common. And it wasn't till about the second or the end of the second into the third century that among Western civilizations that it became far less common. Although even the Romans agreed that one wife was desirable, not a multiplicity. It was practiced all throughout. And going all the way back, it was also. But you only have to look at some examples of it to see that maybe it's not the desirable thing, and that's why I threw out Jacob. Because he's a good example of what happened. He only had two wives. And look at all of the problems that he lived through as a result of it.
Well,
you know,
Abraham.
Even Abraham, yeah.
David,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, you know, before he ends under Christ, it teaches him abstain from sexual sin and so forth, and adultery and so forth in there. So, under the old law in there, they were... In our terms, with being adulterous and so forth, and they
are—they were
polygamous. Having two wives is not an adulterous situation. It's having a relationship outside the marriage is what the definition of adultery is.
Considered as marriage to all those people.
Yes, legitimately and contractually, legally, both civilly and religiously, they were legally married to however many that they wanted. Does that mean it's the best way? No. And so, even while it was available to them, you see that the masses had one wife. They understood that. But there's examples of those who had more than one, and we only have to look at them in the scripture and look at what kind of life they had. And taking everything in consideration, you see that with Jacob, having two wives caused him a myriad of problems. All the way up through when Joseph was sold into captivity, into servitude, into slavery in Egypt. It was a real headache for him having two wives. Yes?
There would be a problem if we took the position that these were adulterous relationships.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
God told David to take Saul's wife.
Yes, yeah.
And to take them as his own wife.
Right.
And that was a command of God.
Right.
And so they were recognized by God as wife, as adulterous relationships.
Right, right.
There were, of course, certain things that happened, like David with Bathsheba and so on before.
Right.
But that was outside of the marriage
right.
relationship. Then he married.
Then he corrected it. Right.
But he always
exactly.
otherwise.
Yeah.
So it became
a yeah, exactly. We just have to understand what the definition of adultery
but like
really
the
is.
Ideal situation, Jesus even pointed out, goes back to
one. Yeah.
One and one.
One and one.
But there's so much there that with a judgment area.
Right.
That, you cannot say. Like certain societies.
Right.
In African societies in Central America, they have multiple marriages.
Right.
And you have to kind of just say, oops.
Yeah. But in terms of the elder, while within that congregation, and we really need to understand this, that within the congregation, individuals in these communities did have and could have multiple wives and not be breaking civil law or breaking religious law. We need to understand that they were fine in what they were doing as long as they didn't go outside their marriage boundaries, But were they ideal candidates for considering to become an elder? According to what we read from the apostle, no. No. And that's the thing that we want to remember is that while these attributes were good for anyone to aspire to as a Christian, we have to understand that not all of them were met by all Christians. They're not now either, you know. But they're good things to aspire to. It's something that all Christians should aspire to. But in this area, we just need to understand what the law is. These people weren't breaking the religious or civil law. They just weren't ideal candidates in this area. Maybe they were in the other areas. But it only takes failure in one to disqualify an individual, at least at that time. Doesn't mean that down the road things can't be fixed, and that's called growth. You know, so we can't draw the line so rigid that if a person fails, he'll never be an elder. That's we can't take that outlook. And there are some still who have that kind of attitude or that dogmatic about things. If that were the case, we might as well all pack our bags and leave, because we're wasting our time, because we can't be a Christian either, because we're a human being and we're going to fail. You know, doesn't mean we can't do better down the road. You know, any other thoughts or comments?
Well, it's just like somebody I knew in the past. He was an elder at a congregation, but as he got older, in my eyes, according to the book, he didn't qualify anymore. Because he was self-willed. He saw it his way, there was no other way.
Right.
So that would disqualify him. But that's not to say he can't ever change his mind and go back. I mean, and
remove
himself from being.
Right, exactly.
And it would take repentance to get yourself back and clean yourself up.
Yeah, we'll talk about that qualification later, but that's an important one.
Yeah.
Very important. Because you can't, as a body of elders, make progress if you have one person who doesn't understand that from time to time he has to compromise. We also need to understand that we don't mean compromise on doctrinal issues. We mean where the scripture is silent and it doesn't make any difference, we have to be willing to work with each other. The eldership is a team, and if anyone is so dogmatic that it has to be their way every time, you'll never get anything accomplished. When you should be dogmatic, and that dogmatic is whenever the scripture is obvious and dictates how something is to happen, a failure to abide by it is a problem. And so there you have to be dogmatic, but not about everything. So that's what the self-will is. But under, we got just enough time to at least open the door on this. Under domestic relations, there's a whole different area. Now, we've established that the candidate has to be married, has to have one wife. We all understand that. Can't be zero, can't be more. Has to have one, and she has to be living. Has to have one wife, because if she's dead, he's no longer married to her. So he's not married. So husband of one wife. But he has to have a family. And how do we know that? Because if we look here in verse 4, one who rules his own house well, having his children in subjection with all reverence. And then verse 5 continues the thought. But the point is just because he's the husband of one wife doesn't mean that he meets the whole domestic qualification. He can have one wife and he can get along very well with that wife, but if they don't have children, then he doesn't meet the qualification of being able to keep his children under subjection. Why is that important? For someone you'd be considering as an elder? Absolutely, and the apostle says it. He goes on to say it
in verse 5.
Let's read verse 5. For if a man does not know how to rule his own house, how will he take care of the church of God? So an individual who is simply married and never had any children does not demonstrate the ability to not only keep his children in subjection or rule over them as a father. When you look at the position the elder is going to have over the flock in terms of a spiritual guide and someone who's going to be guiding the congregation in their relationship matters, if he hasn't been able to prove his ability in that area, then how is he going to be able to properly lead? Because there are going to be situations that arise from time to time. And if you don't have any experience in the area, you might as well just be beating your gums in the wind, because someone's not going to listen to you because they'll view you don't know what you're talking about. You know, you've never been there. You've never done that. What makes you think you can advise me? And so that's why it's important here. If you're going to guide this congregation and rule over it well and be a proper leader, you need to have something at home that you have done the same thing for and continue to do the same thing for, in order to be able to demonstrate that you are seasoned, a seasoned Christian, a seasoned husband with the ability to lead his household. You know, any thoughts or comments? Yes, Lala.
Well, even with this, with all of these, there are a lot argument. Of thoughts in regard to what it means, you know, how the application can be. Because I've heard of one and a very prominent preacher who said, if a man has been the leader of a Boy Scout group over the years, he has demonstrated his ability to rule. So they're not his family, but he has demonstrated his ability to lead.
Mm-hmm.
And then that goes, can these children be adopted children? You know, that's
They're children nonetheless.
Right.
The thing of it is that I've heard those arguments too. And while you may argue as a scout leader, he's demonstrated, let's, for argument's sake, say he has demonstrated his ability to lead, does he meet the qualification outlined in verse 4 and 5? As it's rendered, no, he doesn't meet it, because it's not his own. Adopted children are your own, and you can definitely demonstrate that. And yes, around all of these, there's arguments that you're going to encounter. Here, it says, the man must be the husband of one wife. All the arguments we went through over what that one meant, here, having children, because the word children is in plural, is the same thing. Would you say a man isn't qualified if he had one child and ruled his house well? There's some that say that. You have to understand the context that this is in. And remember that he is talking to Timothy, directing some instructions for a congregation that already has elders. That's the key. You don't see this stated this way to Titus, but you do see it stated here. And so, is he talking to one elder candidate? No. He's talking to Timothy about a group of elders that already exist and better meet these qualifications. So if I have a group of five people and I say to each one of them collectively, you have to have children and rule your house well, and you had one person in that group who had one child, do you still consider him as part of that group having children? Certainly, we understand that argument. You know, whether you have one or whether you have two, it's the ability to guide and lead that child in such a fashion. And there's going to be conflicts. We all are fathers. We all understand that, except for Anthony. We all understand the conflicts that you're going to have with children. But they're off and on situations. And how overall do you handle those, and does the child continue to respect you? That's really the bottom line here. Yes, Cal, and then Lalo.
Some people say if he only has one child, he doesn't understand the interaction.
More children are better. But
in that regard, one child is harder than two children.
Yeah,
but
can be.
Anyway,
can be.
Titus, I know our time is up.
Yeah, go ahead.
Titus had faithful children.
Yes. Yes.
Which indicates, you know, Christian children.
Yes. Right, exactly. Exactly. So there's more definition as you go on. My point is we have to take these things in context and understand who he was talking to and in what context did he mean these things. And sometimes it's obvious and sometimes it's not obvious. But that's why I predicated this all last week, that we have to understand that there's two different viewpoints in these two lists of qualifications, and you take them together, and together you can understand each one of them. All right. Thanks for your comments. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I think that one of the things that in context, as you were saying, you have to be specific on that line. It's like board an airplane. It's all people that all the parents, all the people that have children, board the plane first.
Right.
And that, and generally, well, I have only one child, so I don't fit into that category.
But you do.
Come on.
Yeah, exactly. And we have to understand that.
Unless they specify, you have to have more than one child.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So that's how it is on most applications. Do you have children? It's either yes or no. It's mm-hmm. Do you have a child?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
Go ahead. But I know we haven't went over the deacon qualification.
No.
Okay, I'll leave it for then.
No, because we will. We're going to start mixing those in here. But all right. Thanks for your comments.